Order and ask that you stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Do I have a motion about the approval of the agenda?
Second.
All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Item D.
Madam Chair, we've got a few awards and presentations this afternoon. Our first service award is the Gordon Railway. We recognize Jorge.
Our Vice Chair, Ethel Urbina.
Hi, David. Congratulations. That's money for you to deposit in my bank account.
Our Chair, Kathleen Backer.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Secretary Manny Ortega.
One day off with pay.
Excellent. And Assistant Secretary Ray Hemphill.
Congratulations. Here's a little bit of a parking space for you, as well as some tickets to the Osceola office.
All right.
Okay. Any of y'all needing to get back to work can. And anyone wishing to, any member of the audience wishing to address us, please come forward. I don't think so. But we'll soon find out.
Form it a line.
Okay, the consent agenda.
Make a motion to approve.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? We have no public hearing. Informational presentations.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm going to ask Vice President Kevin Crawford to come up and do the intro for our year-end audited financial report.
Madam Chair and Board, good afternoon. We are happy to bring to you today the audited financial report for the fiscal year into 2019. And you saw these numbers in December. We brought them to you, the preliminary numbers and the presentation that we gave to you in December for the audit, and they were unaudited numbers. And since the audit, there are a few minor changes with accruals and adjustments that had to be made. But overall, what you saw was very similar. So given that, Mark White with Purvis Gray, when he comes and presents to you the audit results, he doesn't talk a lot about numbers, but what he does focus on and traditionally is the process. Any things he wants to call to your attention, any things that he wants to focus on. And so we, as you are aware and recall, we usually don't spend a lot of time on those. However, if there are questions, he's happy to answer those. I want to take just a minute to thank Mark and his team at Purvis Gray for what they've done and their work that they do with us annually and how much we appreciate everything that they do. Also wanted to take just a minute to recognize Dan and his finance group. Dan, you want to stand up just for a quick second? Dan is the new manager of accounting that you heard it in David's commemoration that position was in transition. And so Dan took over in early fall last year, and his first job on the job was to do the audit, which is the biggest thing he does. And not only did he do it, but he also sat for and completed and passed the last part of the four parts of the CPA exam. And so he is now going to apply for licensure, and he's passed the CPA. We're very excited and proud to have him in this role, and he's done a tremendous job for this. And with having said that, if there are no questions for me, I'm going to turn it over to Mark White, and I'll have him step you through the audit.
Good afternoon, board members. It's a pleasure to be with you here today. My name is Mark White, and with me is my associate, Katie Eno. We are the leadership portion of your audit team, and we are here today to essentially complete the audit process by reporting back to you, the governing board, to review our audit reports with you and have any discussions and questions, anything you would like to talk about. So that's who we are and why we're here. But before going through the reports, I wanted to, Katie and I were preparing for the presentation here yesterday and just kind of looking at the macro picture for you guys in terms of, the big picture. What is the environment that you're in? Some of it is just, things that you don't control, but much of it is. And I wanted to kind of review some of the big picture macro forces that I think are impacting this organization, and I think you'll see that it's all really pretty good. The first thing that we noted was that you have growth in your service territory. All you've got to do is drive around this area and see the new construction. And, new construction growth drives kilowatt-hour sales growth. And that's a good thing for your organization. And there's a lot of parts of the state that aren't seeing it as much as you guys. So I think that's certainly a tailwind for you. The other thing that, again, you guys are aware of most of this, but I think at audit time, when we look at these financial statements, it's a good time to reflect on them, is you're seeing very stable, if not declining, purchase power costs from FMPA. That is the biggest cost of this organization that impacts the rates that you must charge your customers to recover that cost. So that is also going in your favor, and I know this board, y'all are involved personally with the organization as well as several of your staff, and I think that's paying dividends in that regard. Like I say, that's your biggest single operating cost, purchase power. The other thing is the strong financial markets that we're seeing are really driving appreciation in your pension plan assets. Your pension plan, your defined benefit pension plan, had a very good year for 19 as well as 18. And here we are today, February 5th, a good ways into this new fiscal year. The markets are up and down. Coronavirus takes it down one day, and then they think it's no big deal. It's up the next. But the markets have been strong, and that's definitely in your favor. You see it when we look at your pension fund's balance sheet. The other big thing is on 10/1/18, which was the very first year of the fiscal year that we're auditing, we audit, a fiscal year at a time. That was the date that you made the last payment on your bonds. So you still have a little bit of commercial paper outstanding that you are whittling away a little at a time. That's very low interest cost to you, but you have no more bonded indebtedness, which, when you think about the utility industry and how capital intensive it is, you guys are in a very unique position in that regard. And that's, again, that doesn't happen overnight. That's the result of many, many years of good things going on. Along with that, of course, the Domingo Toro substation was completed during this year. And from our inquiry of staff, and Brian, tell me if I'm off here, but there are no really known big major capital projects that are on the horizon that are going to require you to go back out to the bond market. So, because you've got that debt paid off, the debt service that was going towards paying that each year is now available to pay your normal construction additions to fund that growth that we're seeing. So, again, that's a really good thing for you guys. During this year, you also successfully completed the leadership transition and a major reorganization of the staffing, and that is going to set you up for many years going forward. And you may remember last year, our primary message to you at audit time, we were concerned a little bit about the rate stabilization fund, that you guys were essentially using it a little too much for ultimate sustainability, and that was essentially our comment to you. This year, you were able to add a net $11 million to the rate stabilization fund. So, again, that's a very positive thing for you going forward. And all of these factors that I'm mentioning are reflected in the Fitch credit rating upgrade that you recently received in November. So, those are all tailwinds, and those are good things for you. So just kind of wanted to kind of touch on those environmental and big picture issues with you. We can look at the auditor's reports, which we're going to bring up on the screen, but I'm going to basically present off of the first one, which is your PDF, page 48. Give you a minute to get to that. This is a governance letter, and it's designed to essentially summarize the results of all the other auditors' reports that are issued. And at the very beginning, it tells you that we've audited the fiscal year end 2019. And we have essentially issued an unmodified auditor's opinion, a clean opinion, if you will, that says that the accompanying financial statements are fairly presented in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. That's That's what, that's the primary scope of the financial audit, is to audit the financial statements. The rules of the Auditor General require that all local governments also have your audit conducted in accordance with government auditing standards, which require that we look at your internal controls and we look at your compliance with laws and regulations that could have a material impact on the financial statements. And I'm pleased to say that our report, which is again contained in your document there, it's towards the back. It's actually, we're not going to go there, but it is on page, let me tell you where that is in case you're taking notes. It is page 113. The other reports start back in the back. But we're pleased to report that our audit indicated no significant deficiencies or material weaknesses in your internal control structure. So that's another positive thing as well. Continuing on, there are also reports contained in the document where the Auditor General requires that we issue a management letter and cover a variety of points that they're interested in. Nothing really to report to you there. I'm going to kind of skip through that. And lastly, the other report that we issue is the state requires an attestation report by us on your compliance with the Florida statutes with regard to the investment of public funds. There's a Florida statute 218.415 that says if you want to invest beyond certain safe harbor items that the statute identifies, that you have to have a very rigorous investment policy that conforms to that particular statute and that you must follow it. And the state is very concerned because through the years, nothing too much recently, but through the years, some local governments have gotten themselves in trouble by making poor investment choices. So they now require, as a part of the financial audit, that we audit your compliance with that statute. And we're pleased to say that you are in full compliance with the statute. Y'all have a very sophisticated organization here, and you are well within the standards in terms of what you invest in and how you go about doing it. So back to the governance letter now, which was back on page 48. We did have one item that we commented on there regarding capital asset closeouts, and I don't want to get too far into the weeds here, but just to give you some kind of an idea, put it in context of what we're talking about. You have a work order system that accumulates the costs when you are out doing plant additions, when you're adding on to your utility plant, constructing new plant additions. And as work orders are completed, they must be closed out, and those costs are unitized and distributed to the permanent plant accounts in your continuing property records as well as your general ledger, the books. That's the utility plant number that's carried on your balance sheet. Right now, the software system is not fully functioning that is helping you do that function. So there's a little bit of a backlog that has occurred. These are costs that have been incurred that simply just have not been unitized, closed out, and put into the permanent plant records. That's not the end of the world. It doesn't change our opinion on your financial statements. It's more of a housekeeping item, I would say. But it is one item that we did make comment on in our report to you there. Your staff is working with the software provider, and they are. We met with them just prior to the meeting, and there's good progress being made on working off that backlog. So we are optimistic that will be, if not completely eliminated by next year, well on the way. Because what's happening is, you know, we talked about the growth, right? So, you know, every day there's new work orders started and being closed with service drops and all the various construction items that are going on here. So you not only got to whittle down a backlog, but try to keep up with what's happening currently. So we're optimistic that your staff will be able to get that done. A couple other things that we brought to your attention in the in this letter is the there's a couple of new, you know, you follow GASB, Governmental Accounting Standards Board, which is different than FASB, the Financial Accounting Standards Board. And there's a couple of new accounting pronouncements that are out, and they're going to impact you. One of them certainly will, the other one may, and this is at the bottom of page 48, we've identified those. It's GASB statement number 84 regarding fiduciary activities and statement 87 regarding leases. On fiduciary activities, they're taking a look at any and all plans, any and all types of employee benefit plans for possible inclusion in the financial statements. We currently include your defined benefit pension plan. The trust fund for that is reported in these financial statements. They're also taking a look at IRC 457 type plans and 401A defined contribution plans, and those could result in those items being reported in your financial statements in the future where they currently are not. So that's something that we're looking at with your staff, trying to sort that out. That's effective for this 20 year, so that's a current item. Effective for 2021 is the lease standard, and this is also going on for the FASB folks, the for-profits. And again, try not to get too far into the weeds with all the detail accounting stuff that we live and love, and but to give you some idea of what we're talking about, so you have some basis to discuss this. Under the current GAAP, there's two types of leases. There's a capital lease when you go out and buy something, and it's going to, I shouldn't say buy, when you go out and lease something, and that lease term is going to cover substantially the entire life of the asset, you are deemed to have essentially bought it because you're consuming it. And in that case, you record an asset. It's as if you went out and bought it with a note. You record an asset and an offsetting lease payable. Then there's operating leases, where if you say you rent some storefront for a couple of years, something where you're never, ever going to own it, those are considered operating leases. You don't. There's no balance sheet effect. You simply disclose those things in your notes. Well, the new standard is making all leases be capital leases, if I can paraphrase it that like that. So now everything is going to be a right-to-use asset with a corresponding lease payable. So in many cases, that's going to be a big deal for several organizations just to get a grip on what do you have, because it's not just the things, not just the agreements that say lease agreement at the top. It can be any contract that conveys a right to use of a non-financial asset. So that's one that we're also talking with y'all about, and we've asked the staff to maybe go out and kind of take a look and get an inventory. Again, that's effective for 21, but it's not too early at all to get an inventory of what agreements you have that might fall into this, and let's start planning for the implementation of that. So that's the new stuff that's going to be implementing you. The rest of this report here contains a summary of the significant estimates that are embodied in your financial statements. And we also talk about if there were any difficulties encountered in performing the audit. Those are things we're supposed to address in this letter. And, of course, we had none of that. We have no disagreements with your management over the application of accounting principles. Sometimes that can happen. And that's kind of it. I think that really kind of summarizes what we wanted to say to you today. We would be glad to take any questions or if there's any discussion that anybody would like to have on any of this.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you,
we
Mark.
Appreciate your efforts.
If we could just close by acknowledging your staff, we spend a lot of time here, both in the interim and at the final year end, and we just to let you know, we get great cooperation starting at the top. with Brian Horton, and of course we work with Kevin Crawford and Susan Postens, and our IT auditors spend a good bit of time with Jeff Gray over there, taking a look at IT operations, Larry Matter, and all the various people, and I think Kevin already mentioned Dan to you this year, who did a great job. So we certainly want to acknowledge all the help we get inside here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I want to acknowledge to our people, good job. That's a good report.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. No old business, so we'll move on to new business.
Yes, Madam Chair. Item J1, as you all are aware, our chairperson, Kathleen Thacker, will complete her second consecutive five-year term at the end of September. I know her presence on this board will be missed, as you've been instrumental in driving a lot of KUA policies and directives. However, to ensure that we've got an appointed successor in place, we need board approval for the recruitment schedule to have someone in place by October and get this board's top three candidates into the city commission in June. Included in your board package is a recommended recruitment schedule. The schedule calls for public notices to be advertised during the months of March and April in the following publications: Osceola Gazette, Orlando Sentinel, El Osceola Star, La Prensa, and the KUA Bills. As well as, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, the website as well, KUA website. Is that correct, Chris? The KUA website as well?
Correct.
Okay. The recommended deadline for board, those interested in applying for the board member vacancy is Friday, April 24th at 5 p.m. This board would need to conduct interviews of those candidates that meet the board residency requirement on May the 6th. At that meeting, as I indicated, you will need to shortlist to a list of three candidates. Currently, the city commission has set aside time on one of their future meetings on June 2nd to interview the top candidates. Just as a side note, I did receive couple of things on the board package that was sent out. There was an error in the publication that's going out, both the English and the Espanol, that I believe has been corrected. It said April the 23rd would be the deadline. It's actually the 24th, and we've corrected that. But then I also received feedback from one of y'all about the language in the publication itself, and if we can pull that up, we've got to zoom in so folks can see that, please. If there's no concerns with this modified language or the schedule, I would recommend that the board approve both the schedule and the posting so that we can move forward with this process. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
I make a motion that we accept and follow the recommendation of the CEO on this recruitment for the board.
Any discussion?
Are we still looking at the actual text that's here? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, the one in front of us as opposed to the paper one.
Mm-hmm. I think it needs to be a little more definitive on who they contact here, especially through email. At least that's the way it was done when I was involved, because it doesn't give you really a place to come. It just says the office up.
Okay. Scroll down to the bottom there.
So that's the right extension?
No, the bottom of the English version, please.
Up a little. So that's your extension, or
The executive office extension?
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Can they do this over the computer?
Yes, ma'am. There is an option that
we haven't put it there. I think that's what you're saying, isn't it, right?
No, because they were, originally it was to go to the website and do your application there. But I'm talking about with trying to get a paper, a copy, or a electronic copy sent to you to fill out. You need a way to contact the office of the president and general manager, such as either a phone number and extension, an email address, or something of that nature.
As opposed to the street address.
Okay.
I see what you're saying. If somebody doesn't want to come in here, they can call and be told where to come and how to get access and that kind of stuff.
Okay, we can at the scroll down just a little, please. It is there?
Yeah, is there.
It's right there.
Your telephone number?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the extension. Might not hurt to put it up in the meat of it as well.
Just refer to it. See the bottom.
Okay.
Something of that.
I would think anybody that wants to sit on the board would be able to figure out that telephone number. I would hope.
One more question.
Yes, sir.
Why was it changed from a website application to having someone call them? What was the reason?
Well, we hadn't previously offered that ability. It was something that we were looking to do for those that just wanted to be able to apply online. We wanted to make that available.
But it's not available.
Well, it is.
I feel like that if somebody wants to apply to be on the board, mm-hmm. it would be very helpful for the staff to know that that's in process. So if they call and they request a copy, at least we know somebody that's got a copy out there if we need to follow up, or if, you know, we come to the last day of April and we've got no applications, we have a list of people that we can say, hey, are you going to send this in or whatever. There's just a kind of a quality control issue as opposed
to disconnect.
Yeah, if they're just going online, 50 people may look at the application and nobody really ends up wanting to send it in. And we would have no way to know what 50 people had looked at it.
Is there a counter on the system that we
maybe,
can do?
But it doesn't
it
tell
just,
who
it is. Just logs the applicants with the timestamp.
Yeah.
Is there a way to look at what's on the website? I've never seen it.
Can we pull that up, please?
I made some corrections to the Spanish.
Thank you, Director.
So that it sounds like an adult rather than a child.
My thinking was just that if we had two options, because if someone is interested in being a board member, they might feel more comfortable going online and filling it out. And I'm assuming we monitor those applications, so we'll know if they're interested, they're going to do that. Or they call in if they don't have access to
Here's
a computer.
Here's the form
something.
In front of us here.
Okay. And as you can see, the documents that you would otherwise and historically are used to getting when you apply for board membership, there's the charter, the bylaws, and et cetera, that are there. The language change in the public notification removed the reference to the website to encourage folks to try to reach out to us in person. But again, it's at the board's discretion. If you'd like that language in there, you know, we can leave it in there.
Well, the other thing is, if we have given them a copy of the responsibilities and the duties, we know they have a copy of that. It's not a matter of did they follow the link on here or didn't they. They have a whole packet of information in their hand to go by. How much time's required and all that is right there in their hand if they've called up here and gotten it.
Okay, so I guess it's a matter of preference. I would personally use the website versus calling myself, but, you know, everybody's different. But
it's the will of the board.
What about doing it both ways?
I'm confused as what we're asking for here.
Whether we will...
We have it online, and then what?
No, well, whether we continue to have it online or whether we do it as a paper copy.
Oh, we do both?
Where a potential person calls...
We walk in or...
Or call and...
Get it mailed to them.
Yeah.
Why can't we have both?
You can. You just simply wouldn't know what's going on the website because it doesn't monitor who has approached this or what they've looked at or whatever.
But somebody receives it, so we'll
yeah, if it. They go through the process.
So who gets application. This offline?
Executive staff will get it offline. We'll retrieve it. The applications. Yes.
Okay. So it doesn't go somewhere in the internet?
No, ma'am.
No.
Look at it, okay. I suggest we have both.
I think we need both.
Okay.
We need a motion. I move we have both.
I second.
We have we already have
a question on the
well,
table.
So can we please Madam Chair, can we please bring back up the board publication language, please? The red line language.
There is a motion.
I will have to withdraw my motion.
Is this original discussion?
It was
but
discussion.
The motion is back on this. So if we vote on that, we're voting on this.
Right, we have to
as it's corrected.
Yes, Director Ortega needs to withdraw.
Exactly.
Pardon?
I have to withdraw, and I will withdraw my
motion.
Okay.
So where are we?
Do we want what's written here, or do we want to change what's written here?
I think we want to put the...
So would you you can either keep this language or you can keep the language that was in the board package. Basically, you would strike out the what was added in red, and remove the what's been striked out there.
But then you remove any possibility of them coming here to get it or calling here to get it. Because it goes straight from able to serve in this capacity, complete, and submit the recruitment at www.
Okay.
So you've
We're
removed...
We're looking for a language that says
okay.
both.
Go ahead, you got it.
Yes, sir. If I might, Madam Chair, make a suggestion. Just throwing this out there. Please contact the Office of the President General Manager, KU Administration Building, et cetera, to obtain the required form for submittal. Or... You may complete and submit or recruitment application at www.kua.com.
Okay, let me ask you this. We're saying they have to have a resume, too. Is there a facility on their website for attaching a resume? Okay. So that sentence, this form along with a resume must be completed and returned by the date, stays the same.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Would you like to say that again so that we can put it into effect?
Sure. If you are willing, here's how the language would now read. If you are willing and able to serve in this capacity, please contact the Office of the President and General Manager, KUA Administration Building, 1701 West Carroll Street, to obtain the required form for submittal. Or you may complete and submit the board recruitment application online at www.kua.com, and the rest of the changes stay.
I suggest you in the zip code in here, by the way.
It's down below.
Yeah, but they're not even going to see the telephone number, so they're never going to look at the zip code.
We need a motion to accept the new language. That was suggested by, and I make that motion.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay.
Okay, Madam Chair, item J2 is a recommendation to seek approval to purchase 18 15 kV pole mounted reclosers. As you all are aware, we're always looking for ways to improve customer experience, customer reliability, and this is one of those opportunities. I'm going to ask Larry Mattern, Vice President of Operations, to walk us through this.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for the recognition today, and we recognize you also as a great board, so thank you for that. What we're talking about tonight is the 15 kV pole mount reclosers, and it's, if you ever heard us say, and or maybe you haven't, but our system in this is 13.2, but that's the size they come in and would handle that, so I had that question. T.R. Lind is responsible for a lot of this. For most of it, he's done the heavy lifting on this to figure out what we would do, and it's for a better reliable system, and it's, if you may have heard years ago, smart grid coming, it'd be like some of the first steps of smart grid. And what we would do is, if you see at the very top there, we have, where the red dot at the top, that's a recloser. It's in all of our substations. We have that are close by. And we have that. And what a recloser does, if lightning or if a tree limb touches and if we're still intact, it'll open for a short amount of time, close back in, and if it doesn't see a fault or a ground, then the power stays on. You may have seen the flashing of lights in your house before and say, what was that? And you may have seen three flashes and three strikes, you're out. It's, and then the lights are out. And so what we thought, well, okay, if you look down that line, you've got all the lines on the blue would be different, where lines go out to all the different homes and developments. So we thought, well, they have a product. We actually used to use them, but they weren't as hardy as what they are today and as reliable as they are today. It was a recloser you can put on your smaller lines. So the one at the bottom, if you put one there and the fault is at the very on the other side of it down at the bottom, if it happens, that one opens up. Power goes out to that section. The rest of the folks all stay on. So on a typical feeder day, you might have 1,600 people. And I know that might be 300 where that one's located that goes without power instead of 1,600. And also one of the safe things we do when we have a line go out, we drive it down. So instead of driving that from the far end all the way up, we can drive up to that recloser, and it saves time. So it gets restoration faster. Reclosers look like this if we set them here on the floor. Chris asks, should we bring one in? I said, well, they're pretty big, so probably not. And that's what they look like on the pole itself. So if they'd be installed, and this may not be the exact thing, but that's a recloser. That is the brand that we're asking you, we're recommending that you would consider. And we're going to do... Sure.
We have that in the back. And they just come in and do it. Is that
That's probably one of the fuses back in there. If they have to come in and do it themselves, if we're sending the crews in to do it, yes.
And it looks like that, but it's not the same thing.
Yeah, probably a little smaller, and it doesn't work automatically. And that's where it comes with the smart grid type. These things will open automatic to certain. Then also is in the pack, as I wrote a little further. I don't have all those details in this, but there's software that we have that we can add on to our existing software. They can go out and start doing these things automatically with oversight from our dispatchers. So some things would happen that you would get your power back right away that we don't have to start rolling trucks because what we're seeing out there reporting back says it's safe to close this back in. So like Mayor Swan always said, you want to be a pioneer because they're usually face down with an arrow in their back. We're not going to be a pioneer and just put it all through the system. What we're going to do is try where we're going to initial is going to be coming out of Domingo Toro, which is our newest sub, which is, if we do advance and if this test of these work out, it is the best place to have advanced technology put in. So newest, the greatest lot of room that we have. And also that area right there, as some of our folks know, has to be a weather area. This is bipartisan settlement and Neptune. And the weather comes off like it come across there, and we have a lot of outages there. So we want to put a place where we can bang for our buck on testing us out. The other location is... for reliability, we have one recloser that would be open, one closed, and we feed by from two different substations here. This is Meridia and Horde, and is at your hospital area down in the center. And it's set up in such a way that if something would happen short, one opens, the other one closes, and power continues. And it still it does the same as the other. It isolates a smaller area for us to get out there and look at to get reliability. And that's about the size of it. This is the motion that we recommend that we buy this many of them at the price of the $318,516 so we can start a pilot program and get this started and see how much reliability we get. Is there any questions?
Make a motion.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank
okay.
You.
Yeah, thank you. I'm sticking around because I have the next one.
Yeah, Madam Chair. Item J3 is also Larry's. We do some collaborative purchasing at time with other utilities to try to pull our purchasing power together to get the best pricing. And on one of those contracts that we do it for is on wires and cables. And we're seeking an extension of one, and Larry will kind of walk us through it. Specifics.
And again, this is a simple explanation. It's something that we do now. In fact, the collaborative we do now, we've been doing for 5 years. We had a 3-year contract with 2 1-year extensions, which we use both of those. And the wire we're talking about is that wire. It's the big heavy wire. That's where you're going to see the price at the end, and it's pretty heavy thing to spend on this, but it's the cost of doing business that we put into our budget every year. And that's actually our wire yard, and it's the wires that come out of there and go up in the device you see ahead structure. So we're in the alliance, as Brian said, and that alliance is jointly with Gainesville is the anchor, buys from Electric Supply Incorporated. That's who we've had the last 5 years. And there's your alliance himself, and you know, all well-known folks that we deal together with in our area. So the question is, we've been the 3 years and the other 2 years, is it time to look at we think we have good negotiated prices, but it's time to look again. So to have time for GRU to go out and do this and bring something back to us, we need an additional 6 months. So we asked the folks at Electric Supply Incorporated if they would give an extension to pricing that we've had for 6 months, and then in the meantime, collectively we'll have an RFP out and see that, you know, that we're stay with them or either a better competitive offer. Move forward with that, and for the 6 months we're saying not to exceed $1 million, and there's a disclaimer that we have there that we're not saying we're going to spend $1 million. You know, if we for some reason would need a lot of cable, by looking at our historical how we use cable, we don't think we would exceed that number. So that's why that's there. So that's your recommendation. If there are any questions,
motion to accept.
I'll second.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Thank you, Larry. Madam Chair, item K1 is the Customer Service Department semi-annual report, and we've got the wonderful Susan Poston here to walk us through that.
Thank you for the compliment. Okay, here we are. This time what I'm going to actually start with is an update on some of our strategic goals that you established. These are the ones that we're going to take a quick look at and give you a little status update on these, so we'll go one by one. So we have a goal to deploy community solar marketing and the education plan. The target date was January 31st. And these goals, while I'm reporting, these encompass the work of multiple people throughout the company. So we've had a lot of people help with content or a little bit of help with script, but Chris has done an awesome job making this happen. You can see we have a logo for our community solar. This is the website. We are promoting it on the website. And when you click on that, there is a video that explains community solar and a description of it. So this is a great tool for our customers. So this goal was achieved. As you continue through the process, the application is there online as well. And we have had 115 people that completed the application. 10 of them were not eligible, and 4 declined after we contacted them. So we've contacted everyone that's filled out one of these. And then, not really for community solar, but I wanted you to see, because I had mentioned it before, we do have some solar videos for customers that are still interested in considering doing it on their home themselves. We had to eliminate some of the videos that we had because we didn't agree with some of the content when they said you absolutely will not have an electric bill anymore, statements like that. So we felt that they were misleading. So, but we do have some videos there to help our customers with questions about solar. So that's goal number one, and it's achieved. So here's another one. The goal is to install 3 electric vehicle fast charging stations. As far as the equipment purchases, we have 1 in the warehouse. We have ordered 2 more. These have a very long lead time of about 16 weeks. So this goal is going to be pretty tight for us to achieve. We have the cost for 1 is around $31,900. And then actually with us installing it and everything, it comes to about $65,000. So while originally we talked about, you know, strategically placing these, we have customers that have requested information in locations that we didn't consider our original strategic location. So we had to set up and establish service agreements similar to our lighting agreements. And so once we establish service agreements and then there's a cost to these customers, there are more challenges in us meeting this goal. We still think we have a shot at it, but there are more challenges in us meeting this goal. We do have 1 signed service agreement for a fast charger, and that's with the county. They're going to put it at the courthouse. And so we're very excited about that. This installation will require a transformer being installed, so engineering right now is currently working, drawing that up. And then we will be installing our first one. The KUA employees in operations will be their first one to ever do, so they're going to be learning something new, so it's kind of an exciting time. That location as well will give us a lot of visibility within Kissimmee, so that's a good location for us. The city is currently reviewing the agreement. They had a couple minor tweaks to the verbiage in the agreement. Grants helped us out with that. And so they're looking at putting one right behind the Civic Center, which is actually close to City Garage, SunRail, Lynx, and Kissimmee Connect. So, and they have a designated parking area there, 2 spots that are kind of separated from all the other spots, and it's close to a transformer for us, so it's a good location for us. We've sent out 91 letters to key account customers, and we've heard from 5 already that are interested in either the fast charger or the level 2. So we are actively pursuing these. All right, installing 20 level 2 EV charging stations by the end of September. So these, we don't have as long of a lead time for ordering. They cost about $2,800 a piece, including everything. It's about $7,500. Again, we've set up service agreements. The county has signed for 3 of these to also be installed at the courthouse. So they'll have the 1 fast charger, and they will have 3 of these. So once they get this project done, then they're going to go back and look at Shingle Creek. Remember, that was one of the projects that they wanted us to look at right away, but they've put that one behind the courthouse. Interesting, we have a developer with a new development close to here, and they actually are what we call a term make ready. They're making ready the new development for EV charging stations. They actually have signed an agreement for us to install 7 there, but they're making ready to install more at some other buildings. That's great for us if they've laid all the conduit and everything. We don't have to go under sidewalks and landscaping and so on and so forth. So that's good news. And then we have a couple of service agreements out for 4 more. So if all of those come to fruition, that's 14. But again, this is a challenging goal, which is what it was meant to be. So, but we're working on it. All right, smart poles. So this was another new emerging technology. And it's not really the pole that's smart. It's the components, just so everyone knows or remembers. We did receive a grant from APPA, a deed grant for $125,000 to help offset the cost of doing some of this research The research includes, you know, what do customers say they'd be interested in, how much are they willing to pay, and then at the back end, what did they actually do, what were they actually interested in, and did the technology work. So we're looking at setting up almost a sample display at the entrance to KUA. It will have a couple of different pole types and different components, the LED billboard signs, different lighting fixtures, you know, you can have Wi-Fi, you can have all kinds of things, but we're going to have a place that people can drive by and can see what it looks like to have all those components on the pole. Potential customers, the city of Kissimmee is a potential customer, the county and the school district. And the school district, you know, in the area where the students all have lunch and stuff, they're interested in possibly having Wi-Fi at the top of these poles. So they would have their lighting and they would have Wi-Fi. So. All right, target date for AMI meter installations. So this is by December 30th of 2020. The goal was 55,000. We are on target to exceed that goal right now. You can see the bar is going up, up, up. There still are some variables. As you all know, we could run into staffing issues, weather issues, the complexity of the installations. But we are still working on those installations. So that's how we're doing on that particular goal. All right, so what's new in customer service? So we are following our customers' lead. As you all know, traffic in the lobby has declined over the years, whether it's face-to-face or paying cash here. They're doing a lot more online by design. We're trying to give them new channels to do business with us, and they are choosing that. So what we are doing is we are combining the teller and the customer service rep functions into the customer service department. So what that looks like in downstairs in the lobby is one window will be open for express pay, so cashier only. You have your stub, you have your money, you pay, and you go. The other five windows will be full service, and the representative will handle everything from the question the customer has all the way through the payment. So there's no longer a handoff. The tellers don't have to tell the customer. They have to go back and talk to a customer service rep. The customer service rep doesn't need to tell them that now they need to go and pay a teller. So it's combined. So we created a customer service specialist position combining those responsibilities, the responsibilities of the teller and the responsibilities of a customer service rep, too, to handle the entire process. We have allowed all of the employees to shadow whatever part they are not currently working in. So if they are a customer service rep, they shadowed the tellers. If they are a teller, they had an opportunity to shadow the customer service reps so that they could decide if this was something that they were interested in, if they wanted to pursue that. Then we posted the positions. We had 21 people apply for the customer service specialist position. We are in the process of interviewing all of them. We had multiple people apply for the cashiering positions because we're going to have that express payment window. And we will be interviewing them this week. And so hopefully by the end of this week, we'll kind of know where everyone's going to be. And then we're going to start training. The target date for us to go ahead and actually implement the change in the lobby is the middle of March. And everyone has something to learn. Everyone has something to learn. So it's been an exciting time. They're excited about learning something new and doing something a little different. We are also looking at installing some sort of a privacy window or privacy board or wall between the windows, so because people will be sharing social security numbers or whatever to get service initiated and all of that. So that's going on as well. Along with a system, we've asked our IT experts to come up with a way where currently when you're waiting in the lobby, you can see your name on the list and that you're next. Well, we need them to enhance that to say, okay, window 4 is ready for you, go to window 4. So we're trying to do all of that in-house as opposed to, there are very expensive options out there to make that happen, but our IT partners are trying to help us out with that. Exactly, exactly. Like I said, very expensive.
This is just realignments of positions within customer service. These are not new positions. You're just realigning.
It's all the same people. The only new, there are no net new positions, no. Okay. All right, so we're going to talk a little bit about AMI in action and the people and what we're doing with the system, not just the meters being installed. So we did fill two AMI analyst positions in customer service, and so they're monitoring the system and looking at data. Proud and really pleased to acknowledge that our average daily billable reads are at 99.9%. What that means is we're getting good reads from the system, which goes back to the wonderful network that our operations department set up for communications. So that's great. We have actually identified four instances of tampering just by looking at the data. And meter-based repairs, if you recall, we agreed to help customers with meter-based repairs if we had pulled the meter and then found out there was a problem. We've only had 12 of those so far. The average cost has been about $270 a piece. We thought they would be about $400. So far it's good. So we're hoping that continues. We've actually identified a couple of outages before the customers made contact with us. We were able to notify line ops and make the repairs. Now, this is very early, and we are only partially deployed, but we were really excited about that. And then we successfully sent our first OTA, there's another acronym for you, over-the-air firmware update, similar to when your cell phones update. So we were very excited about that. So here are trends for service reactivations, reconnects, and final reads. The blue are when we roll a truck, and the orange is when we were able to handle it through AMI. You can notice in the reactivates and the reads, the AMI activity is going up, as you would expect, and the truck rolls are going down. The reconnects are a different animal, and that's because every time we go out to disconnect, we put in an AMI meter. And that's why all of the reconnects are being done through AMI, which is just wonderful. And so, you know, as we all know, the less truck rolls, less driving, decreased opportunity for safety concerns, so on and so forth. Now, our field services, one department or one division, their overtime actually decreased by 61% between fiscal year 19 second quarter and fiscal year 20 second quarter. It's a savings about $9,300, not a ton, but we're partially deployed. But again, we're starting to see the system work. We're starting to get the results that we were hoping for. Lighting solutions, we have a couple of agreements to this. If you recall, this is where KUA is helping customers with lighting that they own. And they continue to own the pole, and they continue to be responsible for service to the pole, but we're putting KUA fixtures on those poles. And you can see the rusty one to the left. That's what one of the customers has right now. And to the right is one of our fixtures. Ignore the fact that it's a black pole because we won't be replacing their pole. But you can see the fixtures are much nicer. The customers are loving this. So for this first one, we replaced 27 lights. The second one, we're replacing 37 of the old fixtures with new fixtures. And so on that one, we will be collecting $555 a month for 15 years to maintain those. So some new opportunities. Quickly, customer experience, still sending accurate bills, still recovering a lot in-house. Net write-offs for fiscal year are negative, meaning we're collecting more on write-off payments than what we're writing off, which is amazing. I'm thrilled to report this again, but I have to tell you, this is unusual. And we actually had less write-offs last year, even though our revenues went up. So that was great news as well. Deposits, we've increased over $1.1 million over the prior year. So we're up to over $15 million in deposits. If you look at the bills and disconnects and notices, we average about 19,250 notices a month, and we actually disconnect less than 1,100 a month. Okay. This is an all good news. I'm not going to read it to you, but you can see that we're doing well on a lot of the metrics that we pay attention to make sure our customers are having a good experience with us. And there's your good neighbor update, which I know you always like to see. So, and here's some more. You know, we have some new programs that we've offered, the thermostats. The people are still interested in that. The EV charging, the home chargers, and purchasing an electric vehicle. We have a team of EV that are looking at EV and trying to decide if is that what we should be doing, or is there something else we should be doing to get people interested in that technology, and also for KUA to know where they are. With that, I'll take any questions.
Excellent.
Thanks. Seeing no questions, thanks a lot.
Thank
Great.
You.
Thank you. Okay, hear the attorney.
Briefly, Madam Chair, looking forward to traveling up to Tallahassee and Washington this month with the board. Good news, House Bill 653 doesn't appear at the moment to be going anywhere. That's the bill you've been very worried about that would severely impact contributing to the general fund for municipal electric utilities. However, on the bad news front, there is a bill that looks like it doesn't have a number yet. It's going to be introduced this week in the House Judiciary Committee, which would eviscerate or completely eliminate sovereign immunity for local government entities. Why the legislature would want to put taxpayers and ratepayers in the mercy of the Trial Lawyers Association is beyond me, but that's something we'll be talking about. In terms of the APPA legislative rally at the end of the month, I think the main thing we may be focusing on are two. There's a climate change bill that's been proposed. It's quite extensive. It's a large wish list from the House of Representatives. I don't think it has any chance of going anywhere this year. But it could be pretty expensive in terms of implementing it because it's trying to move completely away from fossil fuels. And then there's a chance that advanced refunding, which we lost in a tax bill a couple of years ago, may come back. We may get a chance to have the opportunity, municipal electric utilities and municipalities in general, to refund their bonds ahead of their maturity date. So that's all I've got for you, unless you have questions.
Right. There are your reminders on the screen. I just want to thank all of y'all that participated today in KUA's Field Day and the employee appreciation. I know they appreciated. I certainly appreciated it and your service. Thank you.
Right. Oh, my turn. Okay. I don't know if I should be asking this here, but I think it would be a good idea if our legal counsel could work with the CEO to revise the resolution and bylaws so that the board can interact with the staff and put in there whatever ways we can facilitate that.
I think if we can look at that real quick.
I can't.
You can't pull it up. I think
also in the bylaws or in the documents that formed us, there's a pretty direct statement which makes a whole lot of sense.
The bylaws is more operational, and the directive says you cannot that employees cannot provide information about operations to board members without the CEO authorizing it. So that's where the limitation is.
Yep. But the documents also say we cannot interact with employees with the purpose of telling them what to do. And
right.
I know that's not the
right
wording, but that's very appropriate and needed.
Yeah.
Let us take a look at it. I think that if there's language in there that allows for interaction with staff, provided that the CEO is aware and authorizes it, which is, I think, we're fine with it. Make sure that the CEO is in the loop, and it doesn't put staff in an awkward position.
Exactly.
And so, and it, I think it may let us go back and look at it, but okay. Okay.
I apologize. I had it up right here, but yeah.
Okay.
Manny.
I'm good.
Ethel.
Nothing for me. Just a great day today. Thank you.
Beanie.
Nothing for me.
Well, I'm sure. Well, one thing. There is a webinar on Friday the 14th. That APPA is putting on for those of us going to Washington. So just to kind of reiterate that, and it's from 10 to 11. And I've found those helpful. I've listened to them, I guess, every year, and I find them very helpful. And other than that, thank the employees who worked so hard to put on the employee appreciation luncheon. I feel like we're supposed to be appreciating them, but my goodness, they sure put together a great day.
Yes,
so,
did.
Thank you. Anything else? Okay.
We'll talk.